people that we have interviewed, whether it's Kyle Sampson or Mercer or Battle, have contradictory statements as to what you say. I am sure when the department has trouble with the U.S. attorney, they don't tell a congressman to go tell her, which is right.
Senator, I recall that sitting in a meeting concerned about Ms. Lamb and saying that those numbers needed to change. And I expected that information to be communicated. Now, Ms. Lamb may not have been told that, in fact, if you don't change your policies, there's going to be a change. But I believe looking at the documents, and I never spoke to her directly, but I believe looking at the documents that she had knowledge that there was certainly an interest about her immigration numbers. And why would we have an interest but for the fact that we were concerned about those numbers?
Okay, Kyle Sampson said no one told her. She said no one told her.
No one told her what? No one told her that there was any interest or concern, or no one told her that if you don't change, you're going to be removed.
I'll yield to my colleague.
If I may, Attorney General.
Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California.
She was never spoken to by
Carol
the
Lamb.
Carol Lamb said she was never spoken to by the department about their concern on her immigration.
Now, let me just say, Mr. Attorney General, this is a serious hearing. You've had months to prepare. The U.S. attorney in question says she wasn't spoken to. Kyle Sampson, at public testimony, not the private transcripts, not a private conversation, says the same.
Senator, I did not say that Ms. Lamb was aware that if her numbers didn't change, we would ask her to resign. What I said was that she was aware of the concerns and certainly the interest that we had about her performance. There's no question about that. If you look at the letters, if you look at the email communication, there is no question about
Sir,
that.
I'm going to move on. I think the record will state just what we have stated, that she doesn't believe she was talked to and Kyle Sampson doesn't believe she was talked to about immigration concerns. That was Senator Feinstein's question. That's what Carol Lamb said. That's what Kyle Sampson
Senator,
did. But
why,
I'm going to move
why
on
Why would
here.
Members of Congress send her letters about her immigration performance?
Sir.
Why would they want to have meetings
Sir.
With her? Why would we send her communications about immigration? Because there was concern about her numbers.
Is it general policy of the Department of Justice when they have problems with a U.S. attorney to let a Congress member tell them that something's wrong? Or is the department supposed to communicate directly with the U.S. attorney?
Here's what I'll say. I think we should have done a better job in communicating with Ms. Lamb. I think we should have done a better job in communicating with all of these United States attorneys. I've already conceded that, and that's one of the things that we're going to institutionalize moving
but, sir,
forward.
The issue goes beyond that. It goes to who's telling the truth
that's
around here.
No,
you are saying,
issue.
You said a minute ago she was told. She is saying, Kyle Sampson is saying she was not told. It's beyond doing a better job. It's getting to the real truth in a hearing where you've had a month to prepare, where all of these things are public. It's a key question, and it's still an answer that contradicts what others have said, but I'm going to move on because I have limited time. This is about another issue. There's a real question raised by this investigation about whether you and the Department of Justice intended to bypass the Senate's role in confirming the U.S. attorneys. It relates to the law that Senator Feinstein passed and all but two of us in the Senate voted for. And equally troubling, as I mentioned, is a real question about whether you were honest with the members of Congress about your intent. And this is a serious matter.
I agree, Senator.
To emphasize how serious, I want to read to you what Senator Pryor had to say on the floor of the Senate about his interactions with you.
Can I see his transcript?
Yes, but I'll read it. It's very clear, and I'm sure you know it. His searing words, as you will hear.
I would like to see it.
We'll get it to you. As everyone here knows, Senator Pryor is one of the most temperate members of the Senate. He's mild-mannered, and his words are all the more striking for that reason. He said, quote, "The Attorney General not only lied to me as a person, but when he lied to me, he lied to the Senate, and he lied to the people I represent. I spoke to Senator Pryor yesterday. He stands by those words." Now, Kyle Sampson wrote that to Harriet Myers last September. That's what he wrote. He wrote that they wanted to do this plan of getting around the Senate and appointing interim U.S. attorneys. And he also told Congress that the White House never rejected the idea of evading the Senate confirmation in the Eastern District of Arkansas. According to Kyle Sampson, you became aware of this idea or plan in early December of 2006. He told you about it. You did not reject it. Then on December 19th, Kyle Sampson is promoting this astonishingly perverse plan. He's going forward with it. And this poster, which we have here, and I'll get you a copy of what it says, shows it. Sampson's advice to the White House is, quote, we, meaning the department, should gum this to death to run out the clock. He lays out a specific plan for running out the clock. The Department of Justice should ask Arkansas senators to meet Tim Griffin, give him a chance. After that, the administration should pledge to desire a Senate-confirmed U.S. attorney and so forth. The plan was to use these tactics to delay so Griffin could stay in without Senate confirmation until the end of the president's term. But now, 4 days before Kyle Sampson sends that plan, you personally talked with Senator Pryor. Kyle Sampson testifies that he was in the room. You talked to him twice. He was in the room on one of those occasions about Tim Griffin. Kyle Sampson says you talked with Senator Pryor two times. He was in the room, and you said to Senator Pryor that you wanted to go through a Senate confirmation. This is in December. Mm-hmm. Well, what would you think if you're in Senator Pryor's shoes? There's a plan to circumvent U.S. attorneys early in December. You go along with that. On December 19th, a memo is sent to implement it. Yet on December 15th, you're on the phone with Senator Pryor saying, oh, no, you're going to get confirmation. So which is it? Again, did Kyle Sampson put out this memo completely on his own? Senator, and if he did, I mean, you can't have it both ways. If your chief of staff is implementing a major plan that contradicts what you just told a U.S. senator from that state, in my view, you shouldn't be attorney general. And if, on the other hand, what you said to Senator Pryor contradicts the plan, you also shouldn't be attorney general. Can you explain what happened here? Because
yes.
I am totally sympathetic with what Senator Pryor said.
Mr. Sampson also testified 15 to 20 times in various ways that I either rejected this plan, I never liked this plan, thought it was a bad idea, never considered it, would not have considered it.
No, he said that you did know about it. He told you about it,
Senator,
and you didn't reject it.
15 to 20 times, he said, I either rejected it, didn't like it, thought it was a bad idea, wouldn't consider it, didn't consider it.
Okay, then he went ahead when you didn't like the plan on December 19th.
Senator,
That was later that you didn't like the plan. Kyle Sampson said in December you had no rejection of the plan, but let's even assume you didn't like it. What are we to think as U.S. senators? You don't like a plan. Your chief of staff, the man in charge of everything, even though you are saying don't do this plan, puts out something to go ahead and go forward. Who's running the department?
Senator, I wasn't aware of this email. But again, I want to be very, very clear about this. I never liked this plan.
You never liked the plan, and your chief of staff, 4 days after you assure Senator Pryor otherwise, puts out a detailed step-by-step process on how to implement the plan. Does that indicate someone who's running the department?
Senator, Mr. Sampson has testified this was a bad idea, and it was a bad idea. And it was never accepted, not only by me, but he also testified as to the principles.
Mr. Sampson said it was a bad idea in retrospect in February and March. In December, he was going full bore ahead with the plan, as the memo you've just been shown shows.
And he's also testified, if we're going to go on his testimony, that this was a plan I never liked, that I rejected it.
No, that is not what he testified to, sir. Go look at the transcript. In December, he says you did not reject the plan when he talked to you about it.
Sir, I don't recall the exact time frame, but he also said that I never liked this idea. I didn't consider it and wouldn't consider it.
Gentlemen.
I would just say, sir, that it defies credulity that your chief of staff, 4 days after you tell somebody you're going one way, goes exactly the opposite way and says that you never rejected the plan when you say you did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Obviously, though, you accepted the use of the provision in the Patriot Act to replace a number of senators, and now in probably the strongest bipartisan vote I've seen in the Senate in years, we voted to remove that from the Patriot Act.
Senator, if you look at the record, the Patriot, reauthorization of the Patriot Act was March 9th. I mean, the administration has nominated to virtually all of these vacancies. We are pursuing and have been pursuing and respecting the role of the Senate. And I take issue with Senator Schumer's characterization.
We will go back to that, and we have been, Senator Graham has been waiting patiently, but I would note that when you talk about sending up nominations for these vacancies, you sent up two nominations, 21 vacancies. That's 1 out of 10.
Senator, sometimes it's because we have to wait for recommendations from home state senators. So let's look at their performance as well.
Sometimes I think one would look for the possibility of a nomination before they started firing people. But Senator,
we want to continue working with the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina.
I'll let that one.
Senator Leahy has just been glaring at Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, let's make sure that we understand the two things we're talking about in terms of plans. One plan was to get rid of all 93 U.S. attorneys at once. Is that correct?
Sir, I don't know if I would call it a plan. It was an idea that was raised.
Okay, and it was shot down.
That is correct.
Okay, now this plan that you're talking about with Senator Schumer involves what?
It was, in as I understood it, what I expected Mr. Sampson to do was coordinate a review of all U.S. attorneys and make an evaluation, make a recommendation to me as to where there were issues or concerns of particular U.S. attorney districts where it may be appropriate to make a change to benefit, for the benefit of the department.
Well, this December memo that he's talking about or email, what's the point there from your point of view? How do you reconcile the conversation with Senator Pryor and the email?
Senator, it's difficult for me to reconcile the conversation. All I know is what I communicated to Mr. Senator Pryor in good faith
was
that we wanted to put Mr. Griffith in on an interim basis. I didn't know Mr. Griffith that well, but I wanted to see how he did. And I recall telling
Senator
Pryor.
And the reason Mr. Griffin was going to be put in is because the White House wanted him to have an opportunity to serve in this position.
This was a well-qualified individual, yes, and the White House had a desire to have him serve.
And there's no problem with Mr. Cummings' performance. It was just a preference for somebody new in the second term.
I would say that's a fair statement.
Okay. Now, if you told Mr. Sampson 15 or 20 times this is a bad idea, why didn't it sink in?
Sir, I didn't tell him 15 or 20. I don't recall telling him 15 or 20 times. As I reviewed the transcript from his testimony, he was asked repeatedly about whether or not, was this something the Attorney General supported or approved? And my recollection is that 15 to 20 times he said something like, I didn't consider it. I wouldn't consider it. Thought it was a bad idea. I rejected it. It was rejected by principals. Mm-hmm. So 15 to 20 times, as I recall,
right,
this question was posed to Mr. Sampson in one way or another to try to get a sense.
And he always said, you never bought into this idea.
Well, sir, he never said that, as I recall in his testimony. And again, the first opportunity really where this came up.
But he always said that you disagreed with his plan.
I believe he said I didn't like it. Look, I know I didn't. I never liked it.
Didn't you like?
What I didn't like was the fact that I think it's more important to have U.S. attorneys nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate because I believe certainly the appearance of more authority, and it makes them more effective.
And the White House had a different view.
Sir, I can't speak for the White House quite.
But where did this idea come from?
Which idea, sir?
The idea of Senate confirmation being changed.
Sir, well, I can't speak to where the idea came from, but what I can say is I supported the idea because I supported a change in the law, not the idea of avoiding Senate confirmation. I supported a change in the law because I didn't like the notion of a judge telling the Attorney General who should be on his staff. And the prior law had a requirement that after 120 days of an interim appointment, then the chief judge in the district makes the decision about who serves as the acting United States attorney.
Well, just some personal advice. You know, we all respect Senator Pryor, and he said some pretty harsh things, which is out of character. So I would just advise you to sit down with him and walk through what happened, because I think he's a reasonable fellow. Y'all straighten that out if you can.
Senator, I couldn't agree more. I have a great deal of admiration for Senator Pryor, and I think that's a good idea.
I guess my basic problem is that, you know, you apologize here in April to all the U.S. attorneys who've gone through pretty hard times about their job performance, and you gave a very good explanation to Senator Brownback about each person. But it took us a long time to be able to nail that down. And you've given news conferences where things were, you didn't have any ownership of the process, basically. You delegated it. You made the final decision. But the process itself, is it fair to say that when you made your final decision, it was based on trust of your senior team more than it was knowledge?
I think that's a fair assessment. Again, what I understood was that the recommendation that would come to me would be a consensus recommendation of people that I trusted that would know most, certainly better than I, about the qualifications and performance of United States attorneys.
And my basic question is that the decision to replace people based on poor performance that you would roll out to the nation, because eventually it was your decision. I know you've said this, but it really does bother me that people like Mr. Iglesias apparently were never able to tell their side of the story. And if someone came to me and said, this person has to go, they're not doing their job well in terms of prosecuting a particular case or a series of cases, they need to go, no one seemed to contact Mr. Iglesias and say, what is your side of the story?
Senator, I agree with that. I think in hindsight, certainly, what I've discovered is that we don't have good enough communication between Maine
Justice.
And
you said Ms. Lamb did have notice of her poor performance.
Senator, I think Ms. Lamb certainly had notice of the fact that there was interest, if not concern, about her immigration numbers. There were meetings. There was communication with her.
I guess what I'm trying to wonder, is this really performance-based, or do these people just run afoul of personality conflicts in the office and we were trying to make up reasons to fire them because we wanted to get rid of them?
Sir, I think if you look at the documentation, I think you can see that there is documentation supporting these decisions.
Yeah, Mr. Attorney General, most of this is a stretch. I think it's clear to me that some of these people just had personality conflicts with people in your office or at the White House, and, you know, we made up reasons to fire them. Some of it sounds good, some of it doesn't, and that's the lesson to be learned here.
Sir, I respectfully disagree with that. I really do.
Well, I do believe this, that you never sanctioned anybody being fired because they wouldn't play politics a particular way.
I would not do
that.
I
do believe that your associates have prosecuted both Democrats and Republicans. I don't believe you're that kind of person. I don't believe that you're involved in a conspiracy to fire somebody because they wouldn't prosecute a particular enemy of a politician or a friend of a politician. But at the end of the day, you said something that struck me, that sometimes it just came down to these were not the right people at the right time. If I applied that standard to you, what would you say?
Senator, I think what I would say is that I believe that I continue to be effective as the Attorney General of the United States. We've done some great things.
And you have
in
done
the past
some very
2 years.
Good things.
I acknowledge the mistakes that I've made here. I've identified the mistakes. I know what I would do differently. I think it was still a good idea.
What kind of damage do you believe needs to be repaired on your part with the Congress or the Senate in particular?
Senator, I think I need to continue to have dialogue with the Congress to try to be as forthcoming as I can be to reassure the Congress. I've tried to inform the Congress that I don't have anything to hide.
Right.
I didn't say no to the document request. I didn't say no, you can't interview my internal staff. I didn't, I asked OPR to get involved. I've done everything I've done has been consistent with the principle of pursuing truth and accountability.
Finally, you are situationally aware that you have a tremendous credibility problem with many members of the Congress, and you're intent on trying to fix that. Today is a start, right?
Absolutely, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Durbin of Illinois.
Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois.
Attorney General, for being with us today. When you were White House counsel, did you ever sit in on these meetings with the Attorney General and Karl Rove to discuss judicial nominations, nominations for U.S. attorneys?
Senator, that's an internal White House process of making decisions about judicial nominees and U.S. attorneys. I was a part of that committee. Mr. Rove would occasionally, I would say infrequently, but he would occasionally be present at these meetings.
And do you recall the conversation leading up to the nomination of Patrick Fitzgerald to be the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois?
I do not.
You were not present?
I do not recall. I thought your question was, do you recall the conversation? I don't recall the conversation. I don't recall whether or not I was present. I suspect I probably was, but I don't recall.
It's been reported that Mr. Rove had misgivings about Patrick Fitzgerald coming into the situation because of political impact it might have in my state of Illinois. Do you remember any statements by Mr. Rove to that effect?
I don't recall, sir. Where has it been reported?
It's been reported in the New York Times. I can read portions of it to you, but it's in the March New York Times article just recently published. But I'd like to ask you this. You took over as Attorney General, if I'm not mistaken, in January of 2005?
I believe it was in February of 2005, sir.
February 2005. At the time, you knew who Patrick Fitzgerald was.
Yes, sir.
He was a rather high-profile U.S. attorney, having been chosen as a special prosecutor by Deputy Attorney General Comey to investigate the Valerie Plame incident and the involvement of the Vice President's office and other offices. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And when you arrived, shortly after you arrived, there was an evaluation made of Patrick Fitzgerald's performance as U.S. attorney. Do you remember that evaluation?
Senator, I think no, sir, I don't. I don't know what evaluation you're referring to.
The evaluation I referred to is one by Mr. Sampson.
Okay.
It's a list. Some of them redacted.
I'm aware now of what you're referring to.
And you're aware of the fact that Patrick Fitzgerald, who had been designated special prosecutor, who was in the process of investigating any criminal wrongdoing by members of the president's or vice president's staff, was given a recommendation, quote, has not distinguished himself either positively or negatively. Do you remember that?
Sir, I now am aware of this. I didn't know about this at the time, but subsequent, I mean, recently I've become aware of this issue.
So these evaluations by Kyle Sampson of U.S. attorneys were never shown to you?
Sir, I don't recall ever seeing these evaluations.
So let me ask you point blank. Do you think that was a fair evaluation of Mr. Fitzgerald at that time?
Well, let me say a couple of things. One, I recused myself and had been recused with respect to Mr. Fitzgerald and the investigation. Two, even if I weren't recused, I would have serious questions about an evaluation of a U.S. attorney involved in this kind of prosecution. And third, let me just say that based upon my own personal knowledge and experience, I think Mr. Fitzgerald is an outstanding prosecutor.
Are you aware of the fact that Kyle Sampson testified under oath that he recommended to Harriet Myers that Patrick Fitzgerald also be removed as a U.S. attorney as part of this purge?
Senator, I'm aware of what he said. I remember reading the transcript. I'm not sure if that it was a recommendation per se. I'm aware of what his testimony. Yes, sir.
Did he speak to you before he made that recommendation and tell you that he was going to ask for Patrick Fitzgerald to be removed in the middle of this investigation of the White House?
I don't recall him speaking to me about that, sir.
It didn't happen, it did happen, or you don't recall?
Well, Senator, again, you're talking about events that have happened over 2 years, thousands of conversations. I don't think that conversation occurred.
Now, Mr. Gonzalez, this is the highest-profile U.S. attorney
yes.
in America. He's investigating the White House, including people that you have worked with for years. And now your chief of staff is going to make a recommendation to the president's White House counsel that he be removed as U.S. attorney, and you can't remember that conversation?
Senator, I don't think that conversation happened. I don't think he ever made that recommendation to me or raise it. And I wouldn't characterize it as a recommendation. I would refer you back to his testimony, but whatever it was, I don't think he raised it with me.
Did you ever have a conversation after the appointment of Patrick Fitzgerald as a special counsel to investigate the White House over the Valerie Plame incident with either the president or Mr. Rove about the removal of Patrick Fitzgerald?
Sir, I believe the answer to that is no.
And can I ask you about the other U.S. attorneys that were removed? Did you ever have a conversation with Karl Rove about the removal of David Iglesias?
Senator, I recall a conversation with Mr. Rove. It wasn't a recommendation or discussion about removal of Mr. Iglesias, but there was a discussion that I recall Mr. Rove had with me about voter fraud cases in three districts, including New Mexico, which, of course, Mr. Iglesias is a United States attorney.
And what did Karl Rove say to you?
Senator, my recollection, the conversation was basically, I've heard complaints about voter fraud prosecutions or lack of prosecutions. And again, I'm paraphrasing. I don't recall precisely what he said, but it was generally about voter fraud prosecutions or voter fraud cases in three districts, including New Mexico.
And there was no conclusion to that conversation about the fate of Mr. Iglesias?
Senator, I believe that I communicated this information to Mr. Sampson, but I don't remember or recall what happened after that.
How about the fate of Mr. Iglesias himself? I mean, was that something that you were party to, the decision for his removal?
It was my decision.
And now that you reflect on that decision, having looked at his performance and considered the calls that were made by members of Congress, do you still think that was the right decision?
Senator, I think that is a very fair question. Obviously, and by the way, this is a matter being invested by Congress, so I'm not conceding that, in fact, what Mr. Iglesias said was true. There is Senator Domenici and Congresswoman Wilson will have their opportunity to present their story. But if a member of Congress contacts a U.S. attorney to put pressure on them on a specific case, that is a very, very serious issue. And if, in fact, we had known, if the Deputy Attorney General, I believe, had known about these calls, which Mr. Iglesias admitted that he did not contact us, would it have made a difference? It probably would have made a difference. But now we're looking in hindsight. And so what we also know is that Mr. Iglesias did not report these conversations. That was a serious transgression. He intentionally violated a policy meant to protect him. And so as we weigh these additional facts, my conclusion is that I stand by the decision, is that Mr. Iglesias should no longer serve as United States Attorney.
In the situation with Carol Lamb, did you have any conversations with Karl Rove about her fate?
Senator, I don't recall having any conversations with Mr. Rove about Ms. Lamb in connection with this process.
Let me conclude, Mr. Chairman. I thank everyone for their patience here. I'm going to send this article down to you, and I wish you'd take a look at it. It's an article published in the Chicago Tribune, April 17th, by Patrick M. Collins. Do you know Mr. Collins?
I don't believe I do, sir.
Mr. Collins served as the assistant U.S. attorney from 1995 to March 2007, was the lead prosecutor in the trial of a former governor of Illinois, worked with Mr. Fitzgerald. He believes that your continued service creates a problem for people who have served in his position as assistant U.S. attorney. And he believes that, frankly, it raises questions about their impartiality when it comes to public corruption cases. He says in conclusion here, while U.S. attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president, they must never serve only to please the president.
I agree with that.
And I think what we have heard here about some of the political considerations, comments about loyal Bushies by Kyle Sampson, the involvement of Mr. Rove in decisions about the fate of some of these U.S. attorneys, raises a serious question as to whether or not your continued service is going to make it difficult for professional prosecutors in the Department of Justice to do their job effectively.
Senator, if I could respond, I think, again, it's absolutely true that this is not about Alberto Gonzalez. It's about what's best for the department and whether or not I can continue to be effective in leading this department. I believe that I can be. I think that there are some good things that working with this committee I can accomplish on behalf of this country. Clearly, there are issues that I have to deal with. And I'm going to work as hard as I can to reestablish trust and confidence with this committee and members of Congress. and of course with the career professionals at our department, and all the credit, everything that we do, the credit goes to them. And so when there are attacks against the department, you're attacking the career professionals.
Now, Mr. Gonzalez, that is like saying if I disagree with the president's policy on the war, I'm attacking the soldiers.
What I'm saying is you should attack me. You should attack me.
Your conduct of this department has made it more difficult for these professionals to do their job effectively.
And
if you ignore that reality, then you cannot be effective as an attorney general.
Senator, I understand that, and I'm going to work at that. What I'm saying is that be careful about criticizing the department. Criticize me.
Mr. Gonzalez, this testimony today is from you about your reputation. It is not about the reputation of the men and women working in these offices.
Thank you, Senator.
What we will do is so everybody will understand, officer. What we will do, if I might have the attention of everybody here, we will break for lunch until 2 o'clock. After lunch, by the funeral is over, we recognize Senator Grassley, then Senator Cardin, then Senator Coburn, then Senator Whitehouse, then Senator Kyle, then Senator Biden, and we will go to a second round. Is that okay with you, Senator Specter?
Yes, sir.
We stand in recess.
Senator Patrick Leahy putting the committee in recess, and before that, and now there are some protests coming up from the floor. The spectators can't quite make what they're shouting out at Alberto Gonzalez, but they're holding up signs saying resign, and these are members of Code Pink, a protest group quite familiar here in Washington, D.C. As Senator Leahy said, the committee's about to go on lunch break, and I'm Neil Conan. With me is NPR Justice reporter Ari Shapiro. And Ari, a very difficult morning session for Alberto Gonzalez. There were moments when it was difficult to tell the political party of the senator who was questioning him, Senator Session, Republican of Alabama, Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican of South Carolina, almost as tough on Alberto Gonzalez as some of the Democrats.
It was so interesting as Senator Lindsey Graham was asking questions of Gonzalez. He had this look on his face. He just looked so sad. It was remarkable to hear him ask these questions, things along the line of, you said some of these U.S. attorneys lost their jobs because they were the wrong person in this job at the wrong time. If that standard were applied to you, Mr. Attorney General, how would you respond? And you heard the audience erupt in applause at that point. Over and over again, the Attorney General just trying to make the case that he should keep his job, that he should stay at the head of the Justice Department, and one senator after another just expressing extreme skepticism and doubt. As the Attorney General says, he is trying to regain the confidence of Congress. This morning, it does not look like he's making very much progress along those lines.
Senator Cornyn, the Republican of Texas, saying your performance on this issue has been deplorable, and going through some of the many questions he had. And then at various points, Alberto Gonzalez has said several times, this is not about me, Alberto Gonzalez. It's about the Department of Justice, what's best for the Department of Justice. And when you attack the performance of the Department of Justice, you're not attacking me so much as the career professionals whose jobs this is. And an explosion there near the end from Dick Durbin, the Democrat from Illinois.
That's right. Durbin said, that's like saying if I disagree with the president on the war in Iraq, I'm attacking the soldiers. And then again, you heard the audience erupt in applause. Durbin said, you, Mr. Attorney General, have made it harder for the career professionals to do their jobs.
This is obviously a difficult day thus far for the Attorney General. Also, when the Senator Leahy says, we're going to finish up this first round of questions where each senator gets 10 minutes and we're going to go to a second round, he clearly believes that there are unanswered questions that he wants to get to. When he then turned to the ranking Republican, Arlen Specter, a Republican of Pennsylvania, any problems with that, Senator Specter? No, it looks like Senator Specter is perfectly willing to go along with this.
You know, you often see rage in these hearings, but it's not often that you see pity. And I'm seeing a lot of pity today. It looks like a lot of senators really feel sorry for the Attorney General. They don't think he's doing a good job. They don't necessarily think he's going to last long. And you know, they're being tough on him, but at the same time, you see this sense from them that, you know, the phrase that comes to mind that I've heard from Justice Department staffers and others is dead man walking.
There's also been some real anger at moments, not just from Senator Durbin. When Senator Schumer kept going back to this statement about this is the dismissal over the prosecutor in Arkansas, who was then replaced by the former aide to Karl Rove, Mr. Griffin. And the idea was, well, did you plan to use this provision of the Patriot Act, which you've told us you opposed, which you thought was a dumb idea, to get him approved without confirmation by the United States Senate? And you told Senator Pryor in a phone conversation, no, you wanted to get confirmation. Then 2 days after that, your chief of staff, Kyle Sampson, puts out an email and a memo announcing, here's how we're going to avoid the issue of Senate confirmation.
Right. Schumer kept saying, who's running the show here? Who's in charge at the Justice Department? Were you lying to Senator Pryor? Senator Pryor now says he was lied to, and Pryor is not a man who's known for harsh partisan rhetoric. Pryor says he was lied to. Schumer says, if you now say you weren't lying to Pryor, then were you just an absentee landlord, a phrase that has been applied to David Iglesias, who we now know didn't spend as much time as U.S. attorney in his district because of his military service.
And there, an extraordinary moment. There seemed to have been a process here where a lot of these senators, even on the Democratic side, wanted to hear Alberto Gonzalez state his case, give him his opportunity, as Senator Specter said, the Republican, his day in court, make his explanation. But when he followed on that, Senator Leahy, the chairman, followed up on what Senator Schumer had said. You can't have this both ways. And when Alberto Gonzalez tried to answer him, Senator Leahy just paused and glared at him.
It was really remarkable. At the end of this little bit of questioning, Gonzalez threw in this little phrase. He said, I'm committed to continuing to work with the Senate. And there was just this dead pause where Leahy stared Gonzalez down. And then just as the next senator, Senator Lindsey Graham, was starting his questioning, Leahy sort of muttered under his breath, well, I'll just leave that as a difference of opinion.
We'll have to get back to that. We will get back to that, is what he also said. There is also the difference of opinion regarding the prosecutor in San Diego. Alberto Gonzalez has said she was aware of our concerns about immigration and gun prosecutions. And again, going back to Senator Feinstein's testimony, questioning earlier today, citing the letter from the Justice Department saying in glowing terms how immigration prosecutions had improved under Carol Lamb in the past year, and then said she said she was not aware of any concerns. No one in the Justice Department talked to her. Your chief of staff testified to us under oath that nobody from the Justice Department got in touch with her to tell her that there was a problem with this. How is she supposed to know? Who's right here?
Exactly. The Attorney General keeps saying, I acknowledge this was mishandled. I acknowledge we made mistakes. And you see both Democrats and Republicans just prying apart each of these instances in which it was dramatically mishandled and saying to the Attorney General, how can you simultaneously say this was mishandled, we should have done it differently, mistakes weren't made, and not personally, you know, take blame in a more serious, accountable way? Where's the accountability, they keep saying? In essence, what they're asking is, how can you remain Attorney General in light of all of these mistakes that you're acknowledging and taking blame for?
One contradiction after another. I thought the use of the Patriot Act provision was a dumb idea. As he said in an earlier exchange, the first time we tried to use it, the Senate would just throw out the law. Indeed, this has proven to be the case.
And in that case, they say, well, then why was your chief of staff promoting doing this? You know, the law was voted overwhelmingly to change it. It was an overwhelming vote, 90-some voting in favor of changing the law in the Senate, and a similarly overwhelming vote in the House. Senator Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the committee, said it was the most bipartisan vote he has seen in recent memory in the Senate, just showing how much the issue has shifted here and how much sentiment has really turned against the Attorney General. That in the questioning this morning, one senator after another who you expect to do defense for the Attorney General and the administration, who you expect to come to his defense, just not doing it at all.
And one issue that several of the senators also keep trying to get to is the involvement of the White House, and how much did Karl Rove, the president's the brain, as he's been called, the architect of President Bush's two electoral victories. How much influence did he have over this process? What was his part in this? Also, Harriet Myers, once the Supreme Court nominee and White House counsel for President Bush, now former White House counsel.
Right. The White House is a big question mark in this whole scandal because we have seen thousands of pages of Justice Department documents. The committee staffers have been doing private interviews with Justice Department officials, but none of that has come from the White House so far. All that we've really seen is information from the White House that was part of the Justice Department email. So we know, for example, that Karl Rove and Harriet Myers discussed initially firing all 93 U.S. attorneys. We know that they went back and forth about the U.S. attorney in Arkansas. We know that Karl Rove received complaints from Senator Pete Domenici in New Mexico about the U.S. attorney David Iglesias there. But we haven't heard any firsthand testimony from White House officials. We haven't seen any documents that have come out of the White House. And so senators are really trying to probe that specifically to learn more about what they played. What role the White House played. And in fact, the one Justice Department official who could probably say the most about the White House's role.
Monica Goodley.
Exactly. She was the White House liaison to the Justice Department. She is the only Justice Department in this scandal to have refused to testify. She's invoked her Fifth Amendment right not to answer questions about this scandal. And in fact, yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee considered voting on granting Goodley immunity, which would compel her to come testify. They postponed that vote for a week. But given that the Democrats have the majority, it seems a safe bet that Goodling will be granted immunity. She will be forced to come testify. And that may be a very interesting in to see what role the White House has played in all of this.
And again, there's a question of missing documents, a question of missing emails. Emails sent on a Republican Party email accounts that perhaps White House officials should have been using their White House accounts. And therefore, these documents are currently missing. And everybody's very interested to see what light they may shed on this entire process.
Right. The White House has said these documents from the Republican National Committee have been deleted, but Senator Leahy, the chairman of the committee, says these things can't be deleted. They are just trying to hide them. And so now we've got this controversy. In fact, RNC emails that the House and Senate Judiciary Committees have demanded the RNC emails, and the White House has said they want to review RNC emails from White House officials before they're handed over to the Congress. Congress says there's no legal basis for that assertion of executive privilege. They're going to go directly to the RNC and ask for the emails firsthand.
And it now looks as if the committees are certainly interested in the testimony of White House officials up to and including Karl Rove. So we may have another battle on executive privilege over that, as well as all of this continues. In any case, the committee has recessed for lunch. Senator Leahy, the chairman, says they plan to return at 2 o'clock Eastern time. We will return to these microphones at that time and resume our live coverage. Ari Shapiro is NPR's justice reporter who's been with me here this morning. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And I'm Neil Conan. We will return to the microphones at 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's about an hour and 10 minutes from now. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News.
And this is AM 580 WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 11:49 Central Time. We'll have our regular lineup of noon hour programming for you this afternoon, beginning at noon. We'll have news from NPR, the BBC, and AM 580 weather with Ed Kieser at 12:35 as usual. We'll also have our market updates for you at 11:58, coming up in just a few minutes here on AM 580, and then at 12:55 Central Time. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Alice and Robert Campbell.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta now offers a private dining room for parties, meetings, and other events. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff of the Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
In news headlines, in national news headlines this morning, some victims' relatives are upset with NBC for giving Jo Sung-hui a platform to spread his disturbing message. Some families pulled out of interviews with the network because of the airing of the images. However, Today Show host Meredith Vieira defended the network, saying the decision was not taken lightly. Calling it a matter of conscience, fairness, and preventing discrimination, New Hampshire's governor says he will sign legislation establishing civil unions for gay couples in the state. New Hampshire would become the fourth state to adopt civil unions, following Connecticut, Vermont, and New Jersey. Massachusetts is the only state that allows gays to marry. And as we've been hearing, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is finding the Senate Judiciary Committee to be a skeptical audience. He's told senators he played just a small role in the dismissal of eight federal prosecutors. But Republican Senator Arlen Specter said the account is, quote, significantly, if not totally, at variance with the facts. Now let's take a look at Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana. This afternoon in southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Elsewhere, considerable cloudiness, highs ranging from around 50 along the lakefront in Chicago to 62 in the far south. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 35 in northeastern Indiana to 42 in west central Illinois and the south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 57 along the Chicago lakefront to around 70 in the south. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy, the high 58, the wind from the northeast at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, the low 38, the wind from the northeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny, the high 67, the wind from the east at 6 to 12 miles per hour. At 11:52 Central Time, it's 50 degrees in Urbana. Again, we will have a market update at 11:58. We'll have our regular noon hour programming, and we expect then to rejoin National Public Radio at 1 o'clock for more from the Senate Judiciary Committee. News from NPR, the BBC, and AM 580 coming up during the noon hour, weather with Ed Kieser at 12:35.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Season brochure and KrannertCenter.com announcements of the 2007-2008 season of guest artists will be arriving by mid-May.
Tune to the Information Advantage, AM 580 WILL, Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. 2 minutes before noon Central Time, 50 degrees in Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. AM 580 will rejoin National Public Radio for live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee's hearing on the Department of Justice oversight at 1 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. At least that is what we expect. So we will have our regular lineup of noon features here in this abbreviated edition of the Afternoon Magazine. And we're going to begin with a look at what's happening in Kansas City and in Chicago at the Boards of Trade. In Kansas City, May wheat is trading at 505 and a half, up 13. July 501, up 12. In Chicago, May wheat 492 and a half, that up 18. July 505, up 16. September 507, up 10 and a half. May corn 370 and three quarters, up 7 and a quarter. July 381 and a quarter, up 6. December corn 379 and a half, down 2. May soybeans 720 and three quarters, up 5 and a quarter. July 737 and a quarter, up 5. November 764 and a quarter, up 4 and three quarters. May meal 198.10, up 120. May oil 3157, up 50. Now to the